Thursday, October 30th, 2025, and you're listening to Abounding Grace Radio with Pastor Chris Gordon. Today on the program, we continue our series in the book of Matthew. We're in chapter 18, looking at verses 15 through 20 with a message titled, Private Discipline, Mutual Discipline, and Church Discipline.
Sin is never static, meaning it always takes a step in people's lives. Don't get immersed in some sin in hidden corners. That takes root. It'll grab your heart and it'll sink right in, and then those roots will go deep into that heart. How many cases have people ended up at the end in abandoning the church altogether and abandoning Christ could have been averted if this kind of loving discipleship had taken place early?
And now, here's Pastor Chris.
I invite you to turn this morning to the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 18. You will remember the context here. The disciples had come to Jesus asking about greatness. It's found on page 978. Asking about greatness, who's the greatest in the kingdom? And of course, Jesus didn't take very well to that. Jesus corrected that and refocused their work in ministry upon the little ones. That was the section that we considered last time. And now today we come to what that looks like in a life of discipleship. We're going to pick up the reading today at verse 10, and it'll be our text, verses 15 through 20. Let's give our attention this morning to God's wonderful holy word. See that you do not despise one of these little ones, for I tell you that in heaven their angels always see the face of my Father who is in heaven. What do you think? If a man has 100 sheep and one of them has gone astray, does he not leave the 99 on the mountains and go in search of the one that went astray? And if he finds it, truly I say to you, he rejoices over it more than over the 99 that never went astray. So it is not the will of my Father who is in heaven that one of these little ones should perish. And now our text. If your brother sins against you, go and tell him his fault between you and him alone. If he listens to you, you've gained your brother. But if he does not listen, take one or two others along with you, that every charge may be established by the evidence of two or three witnesses. If he refuses to listen to them, tell it to the church. And if he refuses to listen even to the church, let him be to you as a Gentile and a tax collector. Truly I say to you, whatever you bind on earth shall be bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on earth shall be loosed in heaven. Again I say to you, if two of you agree on earth about anything they ask, it will be done for them by my Father in heaven. For where two or three are gathered in my name, there am I among them. And there we'll end the reading of God's word today. Well, nobody ever said that being a Christian is easy. In fact, the wisdom that is so put on display in this passage really shows that what you're involved in is truth, because what I just read, no, people do not follow in the world whatsoever. The challenge is just to get Christians to follow this, right? That's the challenge. The wisdom here puts on display. It's the wisdom from God contrary to the wisdom of man. And so this is really an important text today. But I begin by saying, kingdom life is hard. Kingdom life is challenging in ways that we often don't think about. And that is most shown when we are actually being Christians, right? Actually being Christians in this world. We want to look at what that looks like and think about that in light of this context today. One of the most important statements made by our Lord in our last text that we considered last week was really about the mission of the church. Wasn't it? In a sense, he is training them for the great commission that he's going to give at the end of this book. This whole book anticipates that. This book shows us that all along the way. You don't have to figure out what the great commission is. If you don't know, just study the whole book of Matthew. That's what we've been looking at. And it really comes front and center here today. Remember what Jesus said. What do you think? If a man has 100 sheep, and one of them, just one, goes astray, does he not leave the 99 on the mountains and go in search of the one that went astray? What a capture of the mission of the church. Well, what is that? What does that look like? What does leaving the 99 and going after the one straying one, what does that look like? What is that? Well, that was in context of Jesus setting a little child up in front of the disciples after they had asked about greatness, and he was teaching them and training them. No. We're going to correct this right now. We got to cut out that sin right now. This should be where your pursuit is, one of these little ones. If anyone causes them to sin, be better if a millstone were hung around his neck and he's taken out to the Pacific and dropped right in the middle of the ocean to the depths. He cared about the little ones. Jesus was very focused on the children, and we looked at the broader application of little ones. Jesus beat back that propensity to greatness in them, to think that the ministry is about their own personal greatness. And then he said something surprising, which is so wonderful to think about, and whoever humbles himself and becomes like this little one, this little child, is the greatest in the kingdom. How do you humble yourself? How in the world do you do that? My initial title was how to go after straying sheep, but I didn't want you to get too nervous that I'm only doing how-to sermons as Reformed people. But how-to sermons are important. But I titled it a little differently for a reason. We'll look at that. Becoming like little children, we then, denying our greatness, we pursue little ones. We pursue little ones. So much so that we join the heavenly choir, right? Where the angels in heaven rejoice when one sinner repents. How does that happen? Jesus challenges us to what that actually looks like in a very unique way today. Going after straying sheep. Going after little ones. Christ is here teaching us today about a crucial dimension of Christian discipleship. A crucial dimension of Christian discipleship. And it challenges us in the way that it comes to us today. This is not going to be an easy here, but it's a good here for us. It was good for me to be constantly reminded of this, and I realized how important this wisdom is. So today we're looking at this very challenging pursuit that Jesus calls us to, and then providing us an accountable solution to what we think is an impossible task, and then a confident perspective in the Lord's working through it. We're looking at that text through those lens, again, of challenging pursuit, accountable solution, and a confident perspective through the whole thing, that this would become a priority in Christian discipleship among us. That this would become a priority among us in Christian discipleship. In the previous section, Jesus had warned about the dangers of tempting others to sin. He said that. You remember, woe to the world for temptations to sin, for it's necessary that temptations come, but woe to the one by whom the temptation comes. That was in verse 7. And he then redirected pursuits here that instead of being focused on us, go after my sheep. Go after my sheep. What an important challenge for us today. Well, it leads to this very important, after he had said, may you never be the agent of leading one of my little ones into sin. It leads to the important connection of now what follows. Without a break, without a break, as Matthew has put this together for theological intent and interpretation, without a break, Jesus addresses immediately and has the disciples think about how to recover the straying sheep who has fallen into some kind of sin in this life. Remember, the issue was spiritual, Jesus said, of those who lead people into sin. So he's really concerned about that. How do we recover those who've fallen into sin? It's not what we think it is. We've not put this together in this way, that going after a lost sheep has a lot to do with discipline. Oh, we don't like that. That's exactly what he's talking about here. Notice that he raises the issue right away in verse 15. If your brother sins against you, go to him and tell him his fault. This is going to be as practical as you can get today. For all of you who want practical instruction, I'm giving you my best, because that's what Jesus does here. So important. You have an insinuation of the Great Commission here. Go to him. Go. Go and make disciples. How do I make disciples? Well, this is sort of the brass tacks on what that looks like. If your brother sins against you, go and tell him his fault. That's directly contrary to our thinking. You see the wisdom again of this. Almost without question, the way we approach any interaction with our brothers and sisters is, the way we approach sin and offenses in this life, is that if anyone sins against me, if anyone does something wrong against me, it is their responsibility to come and apologize. They have to make it right. And what then becomes our attitude toward that person? Oh, this gets to real Christian discipleship. This gets to like sincere Christianity. Jesus, when you think about this, only our Lord could say this, for the very problem when someone sins is that they don't often see it. Or maybe they do, but they don't often regard it. And that actually, the heart can become so hard in that sin against you that rarely do people come to us. Think about this. How rare is it that people actually come to you and say in humility, they don't even say, I just apologize. They say, I seek your forgiveness. Can you count on your hands how many times people have come for the wrongs they've committed against you? It's thought-provoking. And I hope you see the important connection again. I don't want to miss it. If a man has, what do you think, 100 sheep, and just one goes astray, does he not leave the 99 and go after the one? See, you got to go. So this is how he's applying it. And you see why I said up front that being a Christian called to a life of discipleship means that in self-denial, because they had asked about greatness, in self-denial, it's aimed for the good and discipleship of others, right? That's the whole point of this. That's the whole thread here. That's the whole context here. But what we run up against here is the challenge of the age in which we live also. That's another dimension to this. Never has there been such a passive-aggressive age, and never have we seen so much constant fear of offending anyone. We think the Christian life is equated with being nice. And nice is not always the same thing as being kind, but just niceness. And niceness translates to never wanting to address anything in anyone's life, lest we give the sense, this really weird incessant fear, that, hey, I'm going to give the insinuation that I think I'm better than this person. We got to get over that. Nobody would ever confront anything if we lived in that. So that the effect of that thinking is, this whole section is fundamentally ignored. I read this the other night in our devotions, and I always like to get reactions from my children and family. And I made the point, you know, the call here is not for us to sort of wait around for people to come to us, but the call here is for us to go to them. And we discussed this, and one of the comments immediately was, who ever does this? And then the next comment came, it never works. It never works. Well, we got to address that. That's like what we have to tackle front head on is that thinking in this regard. Do you see the responsibility, though, before I get there, of discipleship here? Do you see the importance of discipleship? When we're talking about the nitty-gritty of Christian discipleship, someone sins and has gone wayward. Jesus is saying, how are you looking at that sin? How are you looking at that person and what they're doing? And here's the heart of genuine discipleship. Go. Tell them their fault. Now, it may not work, but the result is not the basis of action. The success or failure is not the basis of action, the fear of that. If I base that as a pastor, it'd be a tough job. It's all the Lord's. Notice the wisdom. Go to him. Between you and him alone. There used to be an old German and Dutch phrase everyone knew. If you can quote it, that's good. Between four eyes. Obviously, this is not some gross public sin we're talking about here, but a private one against us. Jesus sees this. Jesus sees this as the heart of Christian discipleship. Jesus sees this as what it means to be a disciple, for that's what he does all the time. But notice the motivation. You really see the wisdom in this, in the motivation, that aside from the gossip and the talk and the slander that often goes on when somebody sins, I mean, the first thing we do is pick up the cell phone. Go to your brother and do it privately. And what's communicated through that is that the person wants to keep this private with his brother. He doesn't want this, put out for everyone to know. Let me challenge us here. Sin is something else in people's lives. In your own life, and I know in my own, sin is never static, meaning it always takes a step in people's lives. So in other words, sin begins like a tiny, just think of a tiny weed. I always tell my kids, if you don't go pick those weeds, because I'm not doing it, right? That's why we have kids, this is the very purpose. Go pick up those weeds. And, if they don't do it a week later, it's something else. Sin grows in people's lives. And what happens in the human heart is that it has a hardening process that goes on. Remember what James said about sin. Sin is when it's initial, it's different, but when it's fully grown, it brings forth death in someone's life. The end path of sin is, in the worst case scenario, is somebody, Romans 1, is given over to it. Right? You care about that? I think we should. Think of all the church discipline cases where we have seen a hardening process, and it never starts that way. And sin has never started that way in your own life and in my life. Initially, there's a softness. Sin hasn't taken the deep root that it does. That's why we tell young people, don't get immersed in some sin in hidden corners. That takes root. It'll grab your heart and it'll sink right in, and then those roots will go deep into that heart. How many cases have people ended up at the end in abandoning the church altogether and abandoning Christ could have been averted if this kind of loving discipleship had taken place early? But what do we see? When finally it comes to the church, we'll get there in a minute, everyone's kind of disgusted that we even do this. That's the whole attitude toward it. And often, nothing has ever been addressed about this path and has never been followed with people who get to that point by those closest to them. And then we reap the sad fruits of having to address a much harder heart along the way, right? And people get mad at the church. Is that fair? Well, then there's the issue here with us when we are sinned against. When nothing is ever addressed, now think about this. Imagine if God never came to you in the ministry of the gospel and addressed it. I mean, that's Sinclair Ferguson made the great point one time. God would not rather shame you. God would rather deal with it right here from the pulpit. Right? That's his way. He's so wonderful to us that way. Imagine if none of this had ever been addressed in the paths that we've followed, in the sins that we have pursued. Well, what does it do to us? When we don't address the sin of somebody who sinned against us, it's also not good for us. What does it make us to be toward that person? Bitter? Hard-hearted ourselves? And disregarding of them so that we never would talk to them? That's not Christian discipleship. Think of how many people in life we completely disregard because of sin and offense. And Jesus is challenging. I told you this is not easy. Nothing's easy about, I say that again, nothing's easy about Christian discipleship. But the true character of the Christian, the true character of the mission in denying our own greatness, which was the whole thing that prompted this thing, the true character of the Christian shines here, that they are to be in us our primary objects of mercy and compassion. It's the very thing that happened this morning. Now, it's just, I almost get emotional. God didn't wait for you and what you did this week to come to him. He constantly does this to you, calling you back sweetly. So what Jesus is saying, what an encouragement to boldness and an encouragement to love when you privately see somebody.
That's all the time we have for today. We thank you for tuning into us here at Abounding Grace Radio with Pastor Chris Gordon. Be sure to tune in next time to hear part two of this message from his series in the book of Matthew. We hope you're finding this series edifying and it is encouraging you in your walk with Christ. Thanks again. Until next time.